Norman conquest of England, 1066. He came over from Normandy at that time, and his name was Ranulf de Bayeux. Bayeux is a village in Normandy, France.
So how was that de Bayeux spelled?
B-A-Y, well, D-E-B-A-Y-E-U-X.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the towns which was liberated after D-Day, during World War II.
Well, isn't that also the name of the famous tapestry, which is Bayeux. Really an embroidery?
That's right.
And you're part of that.
So I'm named after that tapestry, if you like to call it.
So your last name has changed over the century.
By is a family name. It's the derivation of bee. Our coat of arms is the honeybee.
Along with Napoleon, I think.
Yeah.
That's marvelous. But the Ranulf came down straight through with the original spelling?
Yes. Well, it was R-A-N-U-L-F.
Uh-huh.
It still could be spelt that way.
Mm-hmm. But we've perhaps somewhat anglicized it, if that's
I've been
true.
Reading a book lately by this explorer called Sir Ranulf de Fiennes, who traveled to both poles in a three-year expedition with his group of people, and his name was Ranulf also.
It's interesting because I know that I had at first begun to stumble over the name, wanting to say Randolph, because that's the common.
Well, my name has been corrupted all my life. Something which I've had to put up with.
I'm sure. Were you ever given nicknames? Did they ever call you Rand?
Yes,
Randy?
When I went to art school, I was called Rudy, which had a limited termination. And then later on, it was Randy or Ran. I'm still called Ran a lot these days.
Mm-hmm. Do you like that?
Glenda calls me Ran, my wife.
Oh, well, then I better not ask you whether you like it or not.
I like Randy. I like that. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, by now our listeners certainly know your name. I suspect that they knew that long before we talked about the derivation of your name, which I found very interesting. Ranulf Bayeux is a distinguished artist, extraordinarily well known in this country, and it's always a pleasure for me to talk to artists, but there's a special reason for us talking to Ranulf Bayeux on May 15th, because Friday, May 17th, at the Bucks County Council for the Arts, which is the Rodman House at 611 and Almshouse Road, there's an opening reception for a one-man exhibition of Ranulf Bayeux, the man and his works, covering works from 1966 to 1985. I have a friend, a very good friend, who is a fine example to me and my best critic, and she heard me on the show one day say exhibit, and she said that is incorrect. An exhibit might be a few pieces hung together, but if it's a group of paintings, it's an exhibition. Correct?
That sounds fine.
Yeah, you would buy that. So this is a major assembling of your work.
Well, this has been in the planning for almost a year, because I got a letter from the chairperson, Virginia Fretzel, about a year ago about this show. And they wanted me to have the exhibition in January of this year. And at the time, I was already booked up for a show in Chestnut Hill. I said, I can't possibly have a show in Chestnut Hill in December and a big show in January. So please give me a half a year to prepare for it. So they did. So they extended it to May. So I have accumulated that since December another 70 works, which just about fills up the whole building.
That's a beautiful place to show. I think it might be difficult to hang an exhibit, exhibition.
It's difficult to hang because they don't like you to put nails in the walls. Everything has to be suspended from
the molding.
Picture molding. And but they had Marion Dart Barford had a wonderful hanging crew. They hung the show Monday evening this week at four very faithful supporters, and the hanging committee got it all up in one night.
I think, again, I can understand from an artist's point of view that that's a difficult house to hang pictures in. From a viewer's point of view, it's a lovely way to see paintings, because it's much more as if you are seeing them hung in someone's home.
Well, you get a good comprehensive feeling of an artist's works when you see, say, 50 or 60 pictures together. It's you get a good cross section of what variety of subject matter an artist has been interested in over that time.
And I want to come back to what you're interested in, but let's stay for just a moment with the Rodman House, which is the headquarters of the Bucks County Council for the Arts. Again, what I like about and what I want our listeners to to know about, because it may encourage them perhaps to go out to see the exhibition, by the fact that it's done in rooms, this is after all a house, I think that those different rooms function the same way a frame functions around a painting. It gives you space between, so that instead of just seeing a long gallery full of paintings, you really go from room to room, and your eye has a brief respite between rooms. Now, that's, again, a lay person looking at the exhibition. How do you feel about that kind of reaction?
Well, the show is well-spaced. They're not crowded, which is all right.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, it's simply the rooms are empty. There's no furniture, no drapes. It's, mm-hmm. it's very austere in a way.
But you wouldn't want that, would you?
Yeah.
Wouldn't
but that... I know in a regular art gallery, that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm. And isn't that done by design so that there's nothing that interferes or competes with the pictures?
No, that's right. There's no other distractions.
Mm-hmm. I want you to talk about, in just a moment, subject matter. You said that one of the things that you can get from an exhibition is to get an idea of the work of an artist, the things that have interested him, and probably how he approaches the subject, he or she, we're using he in a generic term. I want you to speak to that in just a moment, how you chose your subjects, how you do choose your subjects. But will you wait for just a moment while I talk about my sponsor, please?
Okay.
And then we'll be right back with Ranulph Bai talking about The Man and His Works, an exhibition that is opening at the Rodman House this Friday, May 17th. Our sponsor this morning is Bucks County fixture now. It's the short time they've been around, they have certainly become a very important part of Bucks County. It's Oxford Valley Jiffy Lube Complete. And I like very much to say that name because it tells you really what it's all about. Oxford Valley gives you the location. They're on Route 1 north of Oxford Valley Mall, about a half mile up the road. They're next to Barry's Interior. If you want me to be a little more precise, as you go up Route 1 past Oxford Valley Mall, you'll pass that major intersection with Pep Boys on your left-hand side. Then it's only a quarter of a mile from there, and they do share a building, a beautiful building, with Atomic Tires, and it's right next door to Barry's Interiors, again, another landmark here in Bucks County. We're very pleased to tell you about Oxford Valley Jiffy Lube Complete. That's the other part of the name. Jiffy Lube means exactly that. Very fast, very efficient service. You drive your car into the garage. You have three members of the J team, J obviously for Jiffy Lube, take over. About 10 minutes, no appointment, your oil filter, lube, and complete fluid service takes place. The J team takes over. There's someone under the car, someone inside the hood, and someone inside the car. Nice touches like washing your windows, inflating your tires, but most importantly, servicing that car. And the greatest thing is that you can do that in 10 minutes. You don't have to make arrangements to have the car left at a garage all day, make arrangements for someone to pick you up, or just completely lose that day because you don't have transportation. Oxford Valley Jiffy Lube, complete, because though they're fast, as we said, 10 minutes, they are extraordinarily complete and very professional. They have built their business on repeat business, and they know that only serving you and doing the very best job possible is going to make them successful, and they are successful, and that is paid off. Again, they're on Route 1, north of Oxford Valley Mall. Their hours also reflect their interest in serving you. They are open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 8 to 8, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 8 to 6, and on Saturdays, 8 to 5. They are not open on Sunday. Again, you can drop the family off to go shopping, perhaps to eat out, or whatever you need to do. On your own lunch hour, on your way home from work, those hours, or on your way to work for that matter, those hours make it possible for you to have your car serviced. And you know, really important thing is when you have your car serviced regularly, and after all, if it's only going to take you 10 minutes, you can do that as frequently as it needs to be done. You're going to save yourself gigantic service bills. You're going to maintain that car. It's going to be last you longer. It's going to be in better shape. And all in all, you're going to protect your investment of time and money. Oxford Valley, Oxford Valley Jiffy Lube Complete. Our guest this morning is Ranulph Bai. We're speaking with Ranulph Bai about an exhibition that opens Friday night, May 17th, at the Rodman House, which is at Route 611 and Alms House Road. It is the center for the Bucks County Council for the Arts. Ranulph Bai, I think that we may have listeners who might not recognize the name, but would certainly recognize your work. If it's a beautiful watercolor, if it has strong architectural details, if it perhaps has some Victorian atmosphere, although I know you're not limited to that, people would recognize it once, oh, that's the artist. How did you come to choose that subject, the subject I've just named, which seemed to be synonymous with your work?
Well, that evolved very gradually over the years. When I left art school around 1940, I worked with my father for a number of years, who was a picture restorer up in Hollicon, Pennsylvania. And I also had a teaching job at the Moore College of Art for 30 years. And for a large part of my early career was devoted just to getting bread and butter and raising a family and painting in my spare time. It wasn't until middle 50s and 60s that I really began to paint professionally in a way, and I started out mostly being a landscape painter and painting farms and the villages around the Bucks County.
That's one of the problems we have in this country particularly, isn't it? That artists of all kinds, writers, artists, photographers, almost anyone working the arts, find it so often, even though it may be their principal occupation and what they do best and want to do, that it must be an avocation almost, or a hobby, or a part-time, because they have to support themselves and can't.
That's right.
That.
I mean, it's usually they have to have some kind of a supporting income in conjunction with painting to make ends meet. Fortunately, I've been able to retire now from teaching. I can devote full time to painting and doing a little traveling with Gwenda, and we go on, Gwenda and my wife and I, we love to travel, go on short trips around Pennsylvania or abroad sometimes.
And you are married to an artist.
That's right.
Does that give you problems?
No, we try to respect our individual temperaments and workplaces.
Well, then does it work the other way? The fact that you both are artists, that you have a greater understanding of each other and each other's
needs?
I
think so, yeah. Well, we're compatible as far as art is concerned. Yeah. We both see things not too differently. And
one of the best stories I've ever heard in my life was from a woman who was an artist, married to an artist, and she said one time, we used to have the most violent arguments over, and I'm waiting, over what? The color, what color it really, something really was. Do you ever, I not get into violent arguments, but do you ever see a sky that's blue and Glenda sees it as green, that kind of thing? Does it ever happen?
My feeling of teaching is not to prevail your opinion too strongly on the artist's work. These are personal considerations, what colors people use, what brushes they use and colors. It's a personal thing, like what toothpaste you use in the morning. But what I do try to help her is composition and design, which I find a more of a valid reason for criticizing work.
The composition and design, I wonder if in your case that was helped a great deal by your love of architecture.
Well, I didn't quite answer your first question, how that came about.
All right.
In the late 50s and early 60s, I began to observe quaint buildings around the country, particularly railroad stations. I simply thought they were very charming little buildings to paint, and I began to do a number of them over in New Jersey, Lambertville, up in Ringo's, New Hope, and all up and down the from here to Philadelphia. And I began to find a market for them. And I even had shows of them. I think the Reading Company took four of my paintings and had them made into prints. This was way back in the early 60s. And they had them for sale at the Reading Terminal Market, the set of four railroad stations. And they sold like hotcakes for only $3 a set, which is unbelievable these days, to get a set of four prints for $3. These are out of print now. You can't get them. But then some friends of mine came along and says, Ranulph, you know, you shouldn't sell all these railroad stations. Why don't you, you ought to have them published, because you, what you're doing is really making a record of a certain type of building. So I thought
that it's being destroyed.
Yeah. So I began to withhold these paintings in my own collection until I had about 150 of them. And then my next problem was to find a publisher, and that's not easy. I wrote many, many letters and went to many publishers trying to find a market for my stations. And what happened was that I met a gentleman who was one of the editors of American Heritage, who happened to be a railroad buff himself, and he took, I think, 8 or 9 of my stations and made a color folio article about them in American Heritage, and that was a good break. Mm-hmm. And after that, I had something to show other publishers. So I finally did manage to get a publisher. But you have to find a publisher who's interested in that subject. You just can't go to a big publisher like Harper's or Scribner's and say, I've got railroad stations for sale. You've got to find some editor who's interested also in what you're doing.
And, of course, it is a commitment of money, because an art book cost more money, and the plates and everything must be done beautifully. I would think it also takes an editor not only as interest in the subject, but an editor with some sensitivity and some feeling.
Well, they're interested in the bottom line of the, from the financial point of view.
But that resulted in the book called The Vanishing Depot.
That's right.
And it's just been re-released, reissued?
It's been republished. The first edition came out in 73. Unfortunately, the publisher went bankrupt shortly afterward. And then the few books which were printed by that publisher became unobtainable and out of print. So then I went around and found another publisher for the second edition.
I think a book that many of our listeners would be very familiar with would be a Victorian sketchbook.
Well, then I did the other book, yes. This evolved from the Vanishing Depot. I had a gentleman friend of mine who was an architectural conservator, architectural historian named Henry Magaziner, and he suggested to me, he says, Ronald, why don't you do a book on Victorian architecture now that you've done one on stations? And I hadn't given it any thought at all until he mentioned it, and I did. I took him up on it, and I began to make trips all around, up and down the East Coast, trying to find interesting examples of Victorian buildings, which is a very broad subject. You know, if the 19th century is fascinating from that point of view. There's so many styles crammed into 80 years, unbelievable, from Greek Revival all the way up to the Second Empire and Renaissance Revival. It's all can be categorized under one broad term, Victorian architecture, if you want to think in terms of Queen Victoria's reign.
And just the calendar years.
Yeah.
You were way ahead of your time, weren't you? Because right now, Victorian seems to be, quote, in. You know, there are many magazines and books published, and there's a real interest, seems to be a real reawakening. But at that time, I don't believe Victorian was very highly valued.
I was very much an abused former architect. People thought it was ugly just not acceptable. Fortunately, through the National Trust of Historic Preservation and Victorian Society of America and other organizations and local historic groups, the movement of preserving your heritage has taken hold, and a lot of our buildings, not only Victorian, but buildings even more recently have been repaired and restored.
Is that one, Ranulph Bai, is that one of the purposes, goals of an artist, to be able to take a building, a type of building, as you did, that at that time, as you said, was considered ugly, not of much value, and through the talent of the artist, be able to present it so people can suddenly say, oh, hey, yeah. Is that part of the role of the artist?
Well, Victorian architecture is interesting because it has all that gingerbread, and it's conducive to painting. It's not a bland square box, what have you. It's not mundane. It's fascinating. All different roof lines and porches and spindles. It's something to get a hold of for an artist. That's the visually. It's it's an exciting thing to look at and to paint.
And it tells us a lot about the culture. It tells us a lot about the families and how they live, doesn't it, just by looking at that arc. The porch itself tells you a great deal about how families lived. They lived on porches.
That's right. They didn't have air conditioning in those days. These sweep-around porches were very pleasant to sit on. And
necessary.
Yeah.
Now, in your book, Victorian Sketchbook, I know that that book is valued not only for your brilliant paintings in it, but also because of the text. And I believe Margaret By Ritchie did the text. How did that come about?
Yes, that's Margaret is my sister, and I needed somebody to write about these illustrations. These watercolors that I did of Victorian buildings really are illustrations. I admit they're not great paintings per se with extraordinary design or color. They're really, it's a form of a reportage. And so I call them illustrations. They're pictures of particular buildings. But I needed someone to describe their style, their importance, their period when they were built. And she happened to be the right person. She studied architecture and gone to the University of Pennsylvania, has a degree in the subject.
A pretty advanced degree, as I recall, Renify.
Yeah.
She has a PhD in it, doesn't she?
Well, she's still working on
she's
that.
She's working on a PhD.
She hopes to be ready with that by this year.
Mm-hmm.
So she did a very comprehensive study of the subject, and my big problem was for her to condense the copy, which she was going a little bit too verbose on some of the building, you know, taking up too much of book space. So
I
got her to cut it down.
Meticulous and wanted to make sure she didn't leave anything out, but you're probably right.
Yeah.
People will only read a certain amount of text.
Yeah.
What I want to do is talk just a moment about my sponsor, and then could we spend just a couple of minutes, and I know it's certainly a subject that deserves more, but time is always a problem here, on the medium itself of watercolor. It's something I'm particularly interested in. Can we talk about that in just a moment?
Sure.
I do want to remind our listeners we are sponsored this morning and made possible by Oxford Valley Jiffy Lube Complete. They are on Route 1. They're just above Oxford Valley Mall, about a half mile up the road going north. I encourage you to, if you haven't been there, take the time to go. It's very easy to find. You can combine it with other trips, other things that you want to do. But most importantly, 10 minutes. No waiting, and your car will be serviced. Things like the windshield wiper fluid will be filled, the transmission fluid will be checked, the oil filter, your tires will be inflated if they need it, the air filter will be checked. All of the vital fluids, that sounds like a medical term, but it is. It's just as important to the preservation and the health of your car as it is to your body. All the vital fluids are checked and are taken care of for you. Oxford Valley Jiffy Lube Complete. Take your car and let the J team go to work. I guarantee you, you're there once, you will become a bona fide return again and again customer. That's why they're so successful, why the business has been so successful. Again, they're open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 in the morning till 8 p.m. They're open on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 8 in the morning to 6, and on Saturday, 8 to 5, they are not open on Sunday. Oxford Valley Jiffy Lube Complete, right on Route 1, north of Oxford Valley Mall. Our guest this morning, Ranulph By, and we're talking about his exhibition. We want to remind people and invite people, again, to come to the Rodman House for that exhibition. It opens Friday the 17th, but it continues through June 28th, so there's lots of time to see it. Watercolor. I happen to be a very great admirer of watercolor, but I am told that it's one of the most difficult mediums to work with because you're working with paint that dries so quickly and there's mostly no going back. Is that correct?
Not exactly, Louise. I took up watercolor in art school. It was part of the curriculum. I really had no particular feeling for it at the time, but it caught on to me. And after a few months during the course, I just wanted to do it all the time.
What? You said it caught on to me. What attracted you?
It's a very challenging medium, very spontaneous. And it was also in art school, we had to take other things. We had to take charcoal and oil, and we had to do prints and all kind of things. But watercolor, to me, meant a particular challenge, and trying to express a feeling directly with fresh color. And I had a heck of a time getting that thing under control. For 2 years, I struggled with it.
Literally, you can work and rework oil, can't
but,
you?
Yes, but I don't know of any watercolors today who can't manipulate watercolor to some extent, even though they might make a mistake. You can wash out watercolor, an area, if it doesn't come off quite the way you want it. You can sponge it down to a residual stain, so to speak, and then rebuild on top of that.
Would one of the main differences be that the quality of the paper is very important, maybe more crucial than in the quality of canvas for oil, for example?
But what you have to maintain in a watercolor is a pretty careful planning, preliminary planning. It's based on drawing, I feel. You have a subject, and you draw it in pencil on the white paper. And if it's perspective, you have to nail down the perspective correctly.
So it really begins almost with pencil or pen.
That's
and ink, right.
Right? Then you're ready to paint after the drawing is perfectly satisfied. So you start with your lightest washes. I do like sky or the light areas of the picture.
Go from light to dark.
From light to dark, and you build it up. And as you paint, you try to use a clean, direct painting technique so that it doesn't look too muddy or too overworked.
Does that require a lot of brushes and a lot of rinsing?
A lot of brushes, did you say?
Yes, does it require a lot of brushes and a lot of rinsing of those brushes to keep that clean, crisp?
No, I can do a watercolor in about 6 different brushes.
But you must wash those brushes out frequently.
Yeah, you keep a nice clean jug of water handy.
Mm-hmm.
And in the field, I have a little bucket which I attach to my easel. I've been kidded about that little pale bucket that I had for many, many years, because it's not a very big bucket. It only holds about a quart of water. And it's all battered up from being knocked around all these years. And I hang it onto my easel. And if the bucket is too heavy, you know, it pulls down the arm of the easel. It's just about the right weight so that I can still keep my work flat on the board.
We're out of time, Ranulph Bai. I'm so appreciative of your coming by this morning. I'm eager to see your exhibition. And again, Ranulph Bai has a one-man exhibition, The Man and His Works, covering works from 1966 to 1985, Friday, March 17th. It opens at the Rodman House. Please come back again sometime.
Thank you very much.
Louise Collins, good morning.